But I can say that we are motivated by our inner sense of ethics and our obligation to you.
And
we will not give you an information with any other agenda. I think that's the strength of WBI, and that's why you need to own up to it. As far as the information, you can have as many. You can call me for a house call anytime as you want to, as long as you have these 3-5 hours. It is really doing a house call. People tell me. Okay?
It's the basic house call.
That's right.
All this extra is extra, right?
That's right.
But these are the 3 areas of information really everybody needs to know about diabetes, about kidney failure, and about blood pressure, because we
get such
bad information,
Janet,
about it.
Do you know how many people have told me that by making this information available to their children, their teenagers, they were able to light up that spark that I want a life of healing. And they went into naturopathic school or MD school or nurse practitioners or whatever they did, okay? That's one of the most rewarding things to me, is that through this medium, I was able to reach some children, some teenagers, some sub-adults, and they considered that this could be an option for them.
And have become healers themselves?
That's right.
Or heal themselves. Either way, pretty good for the culture.
Absolutely. And also, if a youngster listens to this kind of a material, you have planted the seed that there could be ways of healing without drugs.
Yeah.
Which, incidentally, healing with drugs is a fundamental contradiction in terms.
Give you something else, right?
That's right.
The drugs give you some other condition.
It's been very, very kind of you to support us
this morning.
It is very nice. It's been... I want to thank Professor Dr. Janet Coleman. Janet, actually, I need to thank you for another reason. I look forward to our shared time here.
I do too.
So I think we should take leave. This has been Science, Health and Healing. I am Majid Ali and...
Janet Coleman.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And, well, I guess we have run out of material on that computer, surprisingly, being about 2 minutes early. So, well, and here I am without anything queued up. But I am Jim Freund. That previous program was brought to you on recording. This is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. And coming up will be, I guess it's Hour of the Wolf. I mean, normally 1:30, but as of this month, our interim program director, Mario Murillo, has been putting me on at 1 a.m., which I don't mind. And
as long as we're not being paid.
Your mics aren't live. And so it behooves me to tell you that in the meantime, yes, the thon would have ended a week ago. And yes, we should be done pitching. But no, we're not. So, the reason for the nonstop pitching, they haven't yet figured out, you know, ways of raising money off air. Such things are being talked about. There are actually some very good ideas going along. But until that happens, call now! 212-209-2950! 212-209-2950! Did you happen to catch that phone number? 212-209-2950! And call and ask to become a WBAI buddy. A WBAI buddy costs you but a mere $10 a month for the rest of your life and your unborn grandchildren and all that. But for that, actually, you get a thumb drive. And it's actually a rather cool thumb drive, because aside from the fact, well, 8 gigs doesn't mean a lot anymore, but it was very cool at one time. But it's 8 gigs filled with MP3s, which is a lot of MP3s of 100 different speakers, and the best of WBAI, which, yes, does take a full 8 gigs, because we're that good. 212-209-2950. Or Gesundheit. You can go online. That's why I didn't open the mic. Or you can go online and go to WBAI.org, not ARG, as some people would have it. It's ORG, O-R-G. And on the upper right hand column, well, near the upper right hand of your browser screen, assuming that you're not doing this on a mobile phone, in which case it's sort of like in the middle, it says Pledge Now. And you can click that, and then you can list your favorite show. Well, we know that that show's Hour of the Wolf, don't we? We all know that. There are any number of different things that we can push and pledge, but we are asking you to go to the website. I'm thinking of the movie Help. Go to the window. Leo McKern. To Eleanor Braun. Wonderful, wonderful trivial stuff.
Nothing like network.
Okay, I'll open your mics. But go to your telephone.
Not a thing like Cagney.
Yes. And dial 212-209-2950 and pledge WBAI. We're going to be talking Doctor Who. And I have to still intro the show, but to do that, I have to get equipment working. And in order to have equipment working, well, it helps if I'm not live on the air pitching. But pitching is important because it really is the lifeblood and ability of this radio station to exist. That is the premise behind listener-sponsored radio. It means that you, the listener, are our sponsor. We get very, very, very limited government money. There's a little bit of CPP money, which basically goes to pay for music rights. And there are a couple of capital grants in there. And, of course, being Pacifica Radio, there's all kinds of paperwork that's been fouled up nine ways from Sunday. Name your preferred day, Votan's Day. But primarily, it's you. That's the premise of listener-sponsored radio. We invented the concept before
Kickstarter.
Kickstarter. PBS, before NPR, 25 years before any of those, maybe more than that. 1947, Pacifica Radio was founded in... Can anybody tell us where Pacifica Radio was founded?
Pacifica, California.
Very good. Very good. And what else is located in Pacifica, California, Terrence?
It's a university of some kind. A friend of mine used to go
to. But aside from that, in the future, what is located there?
Oh, well, Starfleet.
Thank you! Give that man a Cupid doll.
The ruins of Pacifica Radio.
Basically, yes. You see, you don't get it. People donate enough. We become Starfleet.
On into the future. There we go.
So
never
right
give up.
Now,
never surrender.
And I don't know. I didn't get that joke, by the way. But listeners, prime directive that you sent me in the email. Now I'm going to do one first. The listeners. Prime directive is 212-209-2950 to pledge $10. Okay, Terrence, it sounded like an offensive joke.
It's a Yo Mama joke for Star Trek fans.
I don't even know what that means.
It's a black thing.
Get near the microphone.
It's a black thing. You would understand. Now, my nephew called me out of the blue. I hadn't heard from him in some time. And he says...
Your nephew was in the blue?
He says, out of the blue, yes. And he said, do you watch Star Trek? You're a Star Trek fan, right? I said, I know Star Trek. I enjoy Star Trek. I'm aware of Star Trek. Why is this important? And he says, well, because you won't get the joke unless you know the Star Trek universe. And I said, ah, okay, tell me the joke. And what he said to me was, what's the difference between your mother and the Prime Directive? And I said, okay, what? And his response was, I've never violated the Prime Directive. Implying he had violated my mother.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the joke. Yeah. I'm not saying it's a great joke.
Which is to say what? He gave her a parking ticket, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought it meant.
Exactly.
It works for me.
He spilled coffee on her fine tablecloth.
Ah, yes, definitely.
But it was funny. Did you get the joke?
Yeah. Yeah.
I sort of got it.
It's a very adolescent joke, but I would have laughed very hard at that.
Well, more adolescent is the one that Kindia told me last night at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings with John Langan and Nicholas Kaufman, and hosted by Amy Goldschlager. I have to do the whole thing, right?
Of course.
And that was, of course, Knock Knock.
Who is there?
Doctor.
Doctor... Yeah, we know.
Yeah, exactly.
But what do you say after the person says Doctor Who?
Doo-dee-doo.
Yeah, there you
go.
Well, most people, Terrence, don't get that far.
Sounded like the opening of Ballet High.
Actually, it did.
Well, yeah, you need two to do this.
I have that music with me, but right now, you know what? I think it's time to actually start the show. Because I vaguely... this computer working vaguely, which meant killing Firefox.
There was a great cover of the Doctor Who theme by a big electronic band that I can't think of which one. That would be a good one to open a Doctor Who themed show with, but I can't think of the group to give it to you.
Well, I use the one by Murray Gold.
Is that the classic?
Well, actually, it's by Brian... Oh, now I'm blanking on his name. The guy who actually wrote the theme.
There was a Ron Grainer who evidently...
Ron Grainer was the...
Ron Grainer was the BBC Radiophonic Workshop. There was a woman who ran the BBC Radiophonic Workshop. She and two guys. Right. And I'm blanking on... I think it was Victoria something.
I thought that was the producer of the Who Show.
No, Verity Lambert.
Verity Lambert.
But now there was something in Facebook. Someone had sent a link, and this woman had come up with the sound and the electronic stuff and all.
Well,
that
the BBC Radiophonic Workshop was a group of people that came out of the Musique Concrète movement of the late 1950s. And they were using oscillators and various things. There is an entire two-hour documentary about how they did it and what they used. And there is somewhere online, and I had the link to it somewhere on Facebook, of a virtual. And if people Google this up, you can probably find it. There is a virtual Radiophonic Workshop. It has the various synths on it done in software, and you can program it and create your own music and who sound effects and all
60s sci-fi sounding theme.
Well, it was serious.
Yeah.
In the early days of WBAI, as in the early 60s, there was a gentleman by the name of Ilan Mimaroglu, who was actually fairly well known musician who did nothing but in the early 60s a program on electronic music on WBAI, weekly 1 hour program. And much of that came out of the Musique Concrète, spelled like concrete, but it's en français, it's concrète.
So
movement.
It must be horribly mispronounced.
Yes. No doubt. As people would generally mispronounce Ilan Mimaroglu, except that I was an announcer who had to during rebroadcasts of his show in the 70s.
And he probably would have taken you aside had you done that on air.
I think he was actually out of the station by then, but we were still rebroadcasting the material. Because he never quite came back for the free music stores, the concerts we had or anything, although we had a lot of electronic music, most notably Mother Mallard's Portable Masterpiece Company with David Borden and Steve Drews. And Steve Reich, of course, performed for us a good deal. But that wasn't electronic. That was just minimalist.
Right.
We had some youngster named Patti Smith. Don't know what happened to her. And we had a lot of unknown people who stayed unknown. But we had our fair share of ARP synthesizers and Moogs. Robert Moog actually attended a concert. We never had a theremin. I was very disappointed. The only time I've actually seen a theremin performed, I was at the former apartment of the now famous young adult writer Scott Westerfeld. And there was a New York Review of Science Fiction reading, this is long before I was the curator, but I was still recording it, that just didn't work out. So it was basically canceled. There were about 8 or 9 people, and we went to his apartment. And for the, instead of having readers, although actually somebody did read, but in between, he played his theremin. He brought out his theremin, and he played it. He and his then fiance, I think now wife, Justine Larbalestier.
Okay.
And that's the only time I've, outside of the movie called Theremin, which is actually rather interesting.
Oh, yeah. Is there a documentary about the actual fellow?
About the guy, Leon Theremin.
Yeah, I think it was about that time for that movie that Brian Wilson was starting to look a lot better. So,
yes.
Exactly,
yes. Regaining a bit of his health.
Yes.
You know, the non-Keith Richard thing. And
life, you mean, as opposed to undeath?
Yeah, get near a microphone, will you?
Life, you mean, as opposed to undeath?
There you go. Speaking of which, Terrence and I are going to be interviewing Watson and Rice on Friday.
Oh.
So we'll be broadcasting that soon enough. She has a new book out, Prince Lestat.
Is in my possession.
Yes, it is. You are possessed
as rapidly as I can
of that book.
Okay.
It's my copy, though. But we'll see. It can be your copy.
I'm willing to let you have it. I have my first edition that you're the vampire. She'll see.
Yeah, well, you'll get that autographed, I hope. And as I always tell writers of that scope, when you have a first edition, it's like you spell my name E-B-A-Y. But this is W-B-A-I. Not to be confused with E-B-A-Y. We want your money. I mean, they want your money more than we do. And we deserve it more because you're going to call 212-209-2950. Okay, let's get the show started by playing the theme music. My theme music by Peter Schickele. We will then...
I was like, Peter Schickele did a cover of the Doctor Who theme?
That would have been fun had he...
He's still around, you know.
Yes, although I'm sorry to say I haven't seen him as of late, so.
Or Anna Russell.
Well, he's...
Yes, yes. Well, the times I did see him, he was so active, I'm surprised.
He's almost as old at this point as Petey Q. Buck.
That's true.
And
which is a perfect time for a revival.
Well, it is, and I'm sure that Peter at some point... will do that. I produced 2 concerts with Peter for the aforementioned Free Music Store that were his music, and a lot of which is witty. And I was mortified. Maybe I'll play some of his music later this year. I often play it in December, and I was mortified when he had this wonderful piece of 8 instruments, one of which echoed the other, which is a very old tradition. But when the audience heard it, they were laughing and clapping. And I'm going, you wouldn't do that during a Bach cantata, in which they do exactly the same thing. But when it's Peter, and I was mortified, and I was apologizing to him during intermission, and he said, it's the price of fame. He said, okay, yes, this is serious music. People are laughing at it. And in the meantime, I have a lovely brownstone and a house upstate, thank you. So I'll have to live with it.
Released it under the name Richard Bachman.
No, because then he would have been writing stories like Robert Sheckley. But Anyway. Run! Anyway. No, that would be bringing us back to Doctor Who. But anyway.
Yes.
Run, Rose! Anyway.
Run for your life.
Yes. Let's do the theme, shall
yes.
we?
Yes.
It's time to howl.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. The opening credits to Monty Python and the Holy Grail really only covered a fraction of the story. Not just Sweden, but the whole of Scandinavia is worth your attention. Yes, there are lovely lakes and the majestic moose, but also some of the most effed up movies on Earth come from this region. Maybe it's got something to do with the crazy day cycles up there, or all that fish, but Scandinavia manages to consistently turn out films with a dark, cynical worldview heightened by an ironic attitude that really deserve more attention and appreciation. Famous stuff like Let the Right One In, and pretty much anything Lars von Trier does, but also stuff like Dead Snow from Norway, about a group of teens fighting Nazi zombies, Denmark's Fear Me Not, in which a loving husband self-doses on an experimental drug and develops some violently psychotic theories about human relations. And if you want to throw Finland into the mix, which is a bit of a stretch, but I'm going to do it anyway, there's Rare Exports, in which Santa Claus is re-envisioned as a giant pagan god of vengeance. Like I said, crazy day cycles. And now Spectrevision, the production company partly founded by Elijah Wood, has had a hand in releasing on home vid a new film, LFO, a Swedish-Danish co-production, and, man, if you weren't aware of it before, Frodo has moved on to backing some seriously twisted stuff. LFO stands for Low Frequency Oscillation, and LFO the film is about this amateur scientist, Robert, played with fusty, weaselly glory by Patrick Carlson, who's discovered a sonic tone that induces an instant and very effective hypnotic state. Not the kind of stuff that should be tinkered around by amateurs, and especially not the kind of amateur Robert is, the kind whose wife and son died under suspicious circumstances, and who sees nothing wrong with testing out his discovery on the lovely young couple who's just moved in next door, particularly that very lovely wife. Non-consensual carnal knowledge follows, of course, soon joined by weird marriage counseling sessions, experimental reconfigurations of the nuclear family, and capped off by Robert developing some seriously megalomaniacal plans for his discovery. By the way, did I mention that Robert is medicating for some unspecified mental condition? That's not going to help. LFO is directed by Swedish director Antonio Toblin as a kind of deadpan comedy. Practically all of the action is confined to Robert's house, providing a blandly middle-class stage for Robert's expanding set of psychological atrocities. There are places where the film feels like it's spinning its wheels or going over ground already explored, but it's altogether a tart and grimly humorous exploration of what happens when an ultimate power winds up in the hands of the last person who should have it. And it has perhaps the most nihilistic farewell to an audience ever. And just for that, I love it. I'm Dan Persons. Check out my interview with director Alexander Aja on his film Horns. That podcast is available over at Cinefantastique Online at cfqonline.com.
Now, Dan failed to Dan didn't mention. He's naming all of these Swedish and Norwegian and Scandinavian strange films, like Let the Right One In with monsters and stuff like that. And there is one that he did not mention. There is one that he absolutely failed to mention. And it is called Hour of the Wolf, directed by Ingmar Bergman, 1969.
Thank you.
And that, of course, is the very original theme, first broadcast about 51 years ago, of the television series Doctor Who. Now, when Hour of the Wolf deals with science fiction, fantasy, and related fields of endeavor, I like to think of it as a highbrow show, even when we're doing junk entertainment, you know, good sci-fi fantasy and things like that. I'm the kind of person who says, don't say sci-fi, it's science, it's SF, you know. Sci-fi is this lowbrow kind of thing, and in fact the term sci-fi was coined by Forrest J. Ackerman in his magazine Famous Monsters of Filmland for the express purpose of differentiating it from SF. The term was created to not mean science fiction. It was the robot movies and monster movies, them, and stuff from other planets and in the 50s.
So Roger Corman films.
Yeah.
Okay. So Sci-Fi Channel is then aptly named because that's pretty much what it's loaded with.
That's right. Except even then they changed their name. Although they're trying to get back to sci-fi and even some, they're attempting SF. Mm-hmm. But their attempts at SF in the past, for the most part, have been, pretty shaky. Pretty shaky.
You know, they did one amazing thing, which then just completely vanished, which I wish I could remember the name of it. It was that motel, interdimensional motel. The room.
That was very good.
It was brilliant. It was like, I sat there watching it going, I can't believe.
It was a miniseries. Originally,
it was a miniseries.
Written for NBC.
Well, that explains it. I was like, I can't believe this is so, I can't believe it was written for NBC. It was very intelligent. But I was amazed at the sheer quality, that the well thought out nature, the originality.
I mean, Battlestar Galapagos was supposed to be on originally. They were thinking was going to NBC, and Universal, whoever owns NBC, decided to put it on the Sci-Fi Channel, and that's how it got railroaded there. But the Sci-Fi Channel has never The Sci-Fi Channel had every opportunity to pick up Doctor Who. It had every opportunity to rebroadcast Blake 7 to...
Well, it did actually at one point broadcast Doctor Who, but it only did a couple of episodes, usually out of order, and often at the... and in the early days, around 0500 or so.
I don't recall that.
This was in its first couple of years.
Well, I was watching it in its first couple of years, when Harlan Ellison had a talk show. I think it was called Buzz. I think it was called Buzz.
Right. Like the MTV series, that's all.
This is quite a while ago. Yeah. It lasted so like MTV's 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. 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 But they really never got Doctor Who that well. And as a result...
And Doctor Who is sci-fi. It's not science fiction in the proper
not based
sense.
On anything.
You know, not when the moon turns into a butterfly. Like,
not based on anything that happened this season or any other.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a borderline fantasy sci-fi more than science fiction.
It's science fantasy if you want to get into really getting down into the terms, just like Star Wars is science fantasy. Yeah. And Star Wars is almost the perfect definition of sci-fi.
All right. Although I think that label has stuck more so in the Moffat years than it has in other runs of the program, where I think Stephen Moffat is on record as having gone to say that he wants to go for a more emotional feel, to try and harken back more towards fairy tales than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the reason why the program has run the way it has the last couple of years.
Yeah. Well, now we're going to get to talking about Who and actually analyzing it in just a little while, but let me start by telling people and quote River Song with one word: spoilers. We are not holding back. We are going to let you know right now that is actually and all this. If you are not up to date on Doctor Who and don't want to be surprised, although I have to say that at the beginning of the season and the way that it ended up so far, I haven't been surprised. And in fact, a little disappointed, but we'll talk about that in a while. Not Over the Sea. I thought the season was great. But the point is that the gloves are off. We're going to be talking Whovian type stuff. I fell into this rut with Tempest Bradford when she was on a couple of weeks ago, and we're going to talk, you know, science fiction and racial issues in science fiction, and we just ended up hooing. This happens all over the place. I end up having all these wonderful writers, and then we just yeeble about Doctor Who because it's one of my favorite guilty pleasures, even when it's
not feel very guilty.
Well, yes, but again, the purpose of Hour of the Wolf, you know, it's not a question of, you know, that should be sort of my off-air thing. But this, but I do guilty pleasure shows, and the Whovian shows, of which this is one, is one of them. So this is not to say that if you don't watch Doctor Who, you shouldn't be listening, but this is to say that if you are concerned about not being... There is a WBAI personality who is a huge Doctor Who fan who is behind in episodes. And you cannot...
Turn it off now.
Even... Turn it off now, R. Paul Martin. You are... You know, he does not... And Pickles of the North, his wife, you know, she wants to catch up. At, you know, this is what happens, R. Paul, when you become an official of the WBAI local and national board. You don't have a life anymore. So, and not having a life means you don't get to catch up on Doctor Who. So, people like that, I mean, I really, it's like, my partner and I, we will talk about something, and Sharon is, oh, yes, right. And R. Paul is just putting his fingers in his ear, doing a Woody Allen, and, you know, so he won't hear anything about it.
Right.
And I'm usually making up stuff. You know, it's like, well, who knew that he was going to turn into John Gielgud? And you know, because I'm not going to do the spoilers.
Right. Right.
But we are doing spoilers on this show because we're here to discuss not so much the history of Who, which you and I and, was it Carol Pinchevsky?
And Keith DeCandido.
And Keith DeCandido did some time ago. We would have had Dan Persons here. He very, very, very much wanted to be a part of this discussion. But alas, he is traveling early in the morning.
Okay.
And could not be here. So so we'll do a makeup kind of thing with him at some point.
Was there an odd thrumming sound in the background as he told us on the phone and someone yelling, run?
Yes, exactly. So you guys have to introduce yourselves so that people know who you be.
Oh, well. Well, I'm James Ryan. I'm sort of a agent provocateur in that I've got two books that haven't been published, but everybody can read right now. Working on a third. Please, Lord, I can find the time for it. And I've also published in a number of places, including Rebeat Magazine, where I've been doing some recent nonfiction work looking back at some science fiction properties.
Ah, and I'm Terrence Taylor, the author of Bite Marks and Blood Pressure, the first two of a trilogy that is one day to be completed. If anyone has an interest in really bloody vampires,
the
do
second
look
one
them.
Isn't that bloody.
The second one is more character driven.
I couldn't deal with
the
first
second one's
one.
More character driven.
But it's Margot Adler and I thought that the second book was more to my taste.
I liked it. The trilogy in my mind is symphonic in that the first movement is bombast and all the leitmotifs laid out and everything you're going to see is splashed out loudly, and the second movement is the slow build to a climax that terrifies me to have to try to figure out how to write it. I may pump Anne Rice for tips. It's like, okay, you stopped for 10 years, you went back. I actually, in one of the interviews, got very good advice, which was her rereading the first five books and getting back into the characters. And it's like, you know, she's right. If I reread the first two books, I'd be totally primed to do the third one. I'd be up to speed with the story. I'd be refreshed in my relationship. All of my therapy aside, I am also known as the Interrupter. I will try not to live up to that title tonight.
That was a villain on Doctor Who, wasn't it?
It should be. Wouldn't it be something funny every time the Doctor?
BBC America. Would it be commercial?
Well, no. But it'd be great though if every time the Doctor started to like go into one of his long spiels, this guy was like, it just keeps cutting him off, and the Doctor finally just flips him out of the TARDIS into deep time space.
Wasn't that Perry's role?
Yes.
way back, Perry? God.
Well, there hasn't been a current
never
Perry.
Shut up. God, she was so irritating. What was she supposed to be, American? She was like British playing American, though. And it was, and it was that flat, fake American accent. It drove me crazy.
You want to talk about bad?
And she found love, and I can't find someone with that voice?
You want to talk about bad American accents somehow relating to Doctor Who? Grace Point.
Episode, and I'm sitting there, I'm watching it, and I'm waiting, because he doesn't talk for like the first 5-10 minutes of the show.
All I've watched of the show so far is previously on.
I only saw the first episode, so I'm watching it, and it was like, okay, say something. Come on. Are you Scottish? Are you American? What are you going to be? Come on. And then he starts doing this weird flat American accent. And it's not a bad accent. He's doing it well. He's not doing it as well as House.
Hugh Laurie and Adrian Lester are two actors.
And it's a plausible voice. It's a character voice.
And Ewan McGregor isn't bad.
Yes.
That's true.
Yes. And there are some British who do it well, but the generic flat, "Hi, I'm from America," I hate that British fake accent.
Well, it's certainly better.
And Tennyson is close to that. It's not quite as bad, but it's
Tennant's. Sounds like it's from, like, Greenland. It's, like, north of Canada.
The problem is he looks so not American. And having that voice coming out of his mouth, it's like, I keep waiting for him to jump into a jig or something.
To his credit, it's better than the first effort, which was Rex Is Not Your Lawyer, which clips of that started coming out soon after NBC decided not to pick up the pilot.
That's right.
Wow, that I missed completely.
And for a while there was a joke when they would people hear that and say, Rex Is Not Your Time Lord.
I'll have to go Google that one. I missed that one.
Yeah, but I really, really recommend to people Broadchurch. Broadchurch was brilliant. Mm, I really... And it had Olivia... Well, that's what Grace Point is based on.
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
The problem with Grace Point is an American remake of a genius 8-part British mystery series.
My problem was that this came after The Bridge, and it came after... There were like 2 or 3 series that were like... Someone died in episode 1, and we're going to dig up all the secrets of the town for the next rest of the season.
If you're
going to
move mics, let me know first so that I can. Because it makes really horrific noises. No problem moving the mic. Just signal me, and I will control the vertical
horizontal. It was just too structurally similar to too many other things that were like, another small town with secrets. I got tired of it after Twin Peaks. I'm sure that the British version is better.
Broadchurch, which is northern England, or is it Scotland?
It's Broadchurch was, I thought, Essex.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was that?
It's when I say the word okay.
Your computer or phone wakes up and does whatever you say next.
It says, "Good morning, Jim." It thinks I'm Kirk or something. And it's my little tricorder does that.
Now it's unhappy because you've woken it for no reason, and it's 1:30 in the morning, and it was sleeping.
Yes, basically. I turned it off sleep mode. That's why.
You fool.
Now it goes into sleep mode at midnight, in which case it does not respond.
So I
turned it off, which I probably shouldn't. It should be in meeting mode. But anyway,
back to the point. Yes.
Back to the point is,
David Tennant does a crappy American accent. Anyway, that aside, we loved him as the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very, very good Doctor. He was, I know that he wins all of the polls because he was the teenage heartthrob.
Oh, yes.
And reviewing, now I come into Doctor Who in the Tom Baker era. And by the way, for Tom Baker alone, on Turner Classic Movies tonight, they had Nicholas and Alexandra. I've recorded that just so I can watch the scenes where Tom Baker plays Rasputin. That's all I'm interested in on that movie. I was shocked to see that James Goldman wrote the screenplay.
You'll never listen to Yankee Doodle again.
Do pull the microphone.
You'll never
Wait, pull it toward you. Your mic is off. Bring it up. Now, talk to the side of it. See how I am with my microphone?
You mean
you
like,
don't? No.
Pretend you're about to
look,
eat
look
a
where
cob.
I am.
Okay.
No.
No.
Hold on.
Should I be doing something else? Am I good? I've got mine like I'm eating a cob
sugar
of corn.
Confetti.
There
sugar
you
plum.
Go.
Okay. And I used to know how to do this crap once upon a time.
And you work for a broadcasting outfit. But anyway.
And he doesn't care if I'm off mic. Or am I on mic? Am I actually on mic?
Yeah.
Here you are.
Yes. Well, the joke wasn't that funny anyway, so...
Look, but the joke that I started
So,
with.
Getting back to the agenda...
Right. So we'll give people to the...
I came in when Doctor Who was first broadcast in the United States. In New York City was on WOR-TV, Channel 9, on Saturday... Saturday mornings,
at 9 a.m.
And I would wake up, turn on my phone, come home after Hour of the Wolf when we were on 5 to 7 a.m., and I did not know what this thing was. It was quite amazing, especially when in the Tom Baker years when Robert Holmes was the showrunner, followed by Douglas Adams.
Yes.
And
I never really saw the Adams years. I must have been to the others because the Adams episodes, when I went back and watched them,
not
on
the
Netflix.
Ones he wrote. I'm talking about when he was
showrunner. Yeah. But no. I mean, I sort of missed that season or so because when I went back and it was catching up and everything.
It's Baker's last season, and then the first Peter Davison.
No. But I came back about the middle, and I never got the last season of Baker and the transition to Peter because by then,
must have seen City of Death. Which is the one that all takes place in Paris.
Yes.
But I didn't.
And it's a very slow moving episode.
You know, I've seen it since then, but I didn't see it then.
Oh,
but when I watched Baker, I watched him in the late 70s, early 80s. And then I stopped. And I think it's because it went off WOR. And I don't know if
it went off WOR and onto
PBS
but never Channel 13.
Right.
And Channel 31. Right.
And the thing is, these were the days
New Jersey Network
where, you know, to get UHF meant twiddling that round thing on the back of your TV and hoping you were in the right
I just used a coat
ray or
thing
something. Went and arranged any metal products one had in the home. Tin foil sculpted artfully often. Supplemented a rabbit ears remarkably well. I was a master of that in my home. I was the one they would point at the TV to bring in the picture better, and I would sculpt little ear things on there.
Yeah, you might want to, by the way, move your mic a little off-center so you don't pop your peas.
Turn it down.
Okay, it's down. See, that's why you talk past the microphone and not into the mic, so you don't pop your peas.
Okay, you can turn me on, and let's see if I'm popping my peas.
You are. You just did.
I was doing it deliberately into the mic, though, to be a joker.
Okay,
okay, but now I'm not Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled pepper.
That's pretty good.
Is that better?
Okay. Yes, that's much better. Anyway. Yes.
But I missed...
I was just giving that background so that we can come to the present.
Yes.
Well, didn't want to get into a whole discussion.
Oh, go ahead.
So, Doctor Who, those were... for the United States, those are the golden years.
Right.
Of Doctor Who, very much.
He
was the fourth Doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And when Peter Davison came on, I didn't know who he was at the time. All Creatures Great and Small had not broadcast in the U.S.
Not yet.
And I just called him Mr. Celery Stick. And the scripts, despite Douglas Adams, the scripts started getting a little bit gnarly and weird, and I sort of dropped out for a while. I came back just before the end with Sylvester McCoy, and some of those were bizarre. The show went off the air, came back for one TV movie with a very, very, very good doctor and a very, very, very bad script.
Yeah.
And totally changing the idea, saying the doctor was half human. Remember that? It was awful. It was awful.
But Paul McGann was quite good.
Paul McGann was excellent. He continues to be excellent in the radio dramas.
Oh.
And he did do one a mini piece for Stephen Moffat, where we see him. We see Paul McGann
regenerate
into John Hurt.
Yes, right.
Into the War Doctor.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which I have to say, I liked that storyline, but I thought that the whole 50th anniversary thing was a fizzle. It wasn't bad. Well, except that the whole business with David Tennant's Doctor and Queen Elizabeth sucked.
Okay.
Big time. Mm-hmm. You're furrowing your brow, Terrence. Exactly. That's how poor it was.
Mm-hmm.
That's how poor it was. And yet, that's the 50th anniversary episode. Mm-hmm. The best thing about the 50th anniversary episode was
the 50th. Was it the three doctors?
The five-ish doctors.
Which was actually a lot of fun.
No, that was great, but that's Peter Davison and
Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, brief run with Paul McGann.
Right.
John Barrowman having this great gag that
Georgina Tennant.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Who, I mean, let's get confusing here. Peter Davison's real name is Peter Moffat. Okay, but spelled differently than Stephen Moffat. He's E.T., where the writer is A.T.
Right.
And he has a daughter whose name was Georgina Moffat, who, in fact, played opposite David Tennant in The Doctor's Daughter. Where he puts his hand into a device, it takes his genes, and it creates a Time Lordy kind of lady.
Yeah.
And so she is the Doctor's daughter, and she goes off into the cosmos, becoming another one of those characters who, why hasn't she come back?
Yeah. Or gotten a spinoff. I was so convinced they were trying that.
Exactly. In the meantime, she, having worked with David Tennant, they got married.
Mm-hmm.
So, the Doctor's daughter, who really is the fifth Doctor's daughter, became the 10th Doctor's daughter fictionally, and is now the 10th Doctor's wife, and in the five-ish Doctors is having the baby.
Yeah.
To go back and look at that episode. Now
I think you do.
A bell. Well, the funny thing would be if the child of David Tennant and Georgina in 20 years or 30 years, because Doctor Who will just keep spooling out forever, played the Doctor him or herself.
Yes.
By then we could have a female doctor. It could be Georgina and David's child daughter.
Yes. I mean, there have
keep been, it in the family.
There
be a legacy.
There are enough Troughtons. I was very, very disappointed to find out that the director Alice Troughton is no relation.
Oh, that's
true. Sam Troughton is. But.
Okay. Well, and of course the Pertwees.
Oh yeah, well, that Michael and Sean and that whole.
There are multiple Pertwees? I didn't realize that.
Oh, yes, there are quite a few. Mm-hmm. Quite a few of them running around. Regenerating all the time.
Actually, there was a picture on Instagram where Sean dressed up as his Da. He actually put on the costume, a yellow wig, and looked very close to what his...
His father
did during his run as a doctor. Yeah. So.
And then the show itself regenerated in 2005. Mm-hmm. Now, why they started using new numbers on the seasons is beyond me. They claim that our current season is season 8. It's not. It's approximately, what, 32?
Let's see, 26, 36, 34.
34, okay. 34. And that's including the season with David Tennant that only had 4 movie-length episodes.
So they're only counting the reboot, you know. It's like easier than doing the math, I guess.
You think you would want to say that what was, until the time was taken off, the longest-running TV series.
But it makes it seem
ever.
Dated. I can hear the discussion among the upper echelons already. We don't want the kids knowing it's older than their parents. We want them thinking it's a news show.
You know what? I think you're probably right.
I've sat in too many of those conversations. Yeah. I can almost guarantee that was brought up. I actually, my own personal thing is I lost touch with the doctor after Tom Baker and was aware of the history of the show. At that time, it wasn't as easy to go back and get earlier episodes as it is now.
Right.
You couldn't go out and just go on Netflix and watch the last 20 years of
Doctor Who. And you couldn't get DVDs.
In the last 3 years, I've caught up on 15 years of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Between Daily Mirror on, you know, Line mm-hmm. and Netflix and the DVDs.
And these
and
are
the
only the ones
play.
Available because
right.
so
oh, exactly.
much of it was just thrown away
I
by the BBC.
I sort of stopped
yes.
at the recreations. I mean, I tried watching a few
oh,
of them
yeah.
where they had
no.
the stills and the audio, but it was like, you know, the stories
yeah.
aren't that good. They're not, I'm not
they
that.
Never were.
But at least if they were moving, they kept you distracted if you were stoned. And if they're stills, but you have to understand, that
or
was my Saturday ritual. My Saturday ritual in my 20s, I would wake up, I would turn on my 12-inch Sony, which had brilliantly beautiful color. I would sit there with my nose 6 inches from the screen, light a joint, and there were 2.5 hours back-to-back, and I would just watch an hour of Doctor Who, and when it was over, I was exactly in the point
okay,
of mind that I needed
me,
to be.
Excuse me, but I really think that you're doing a major disservice to the audience talking about lighting joints. You should use a pipe. But
well, it was the 70s. We were prolificate.
I had a pipe.
I was wild and reckless. What can I say?
I worked in a head shop.
I didn't.
I got all the plumber parts.
They just going to go on much longer because I don't think I have anything to contribute. I could take 5 minutes. You know,
I know. He lives clean. That's how he got into the Mitchell-Lama building. But at any rate, so when it returned, there was a disconnect. I'm saying you're a good and wholesome person, not horrible, nasty people like us. But when it rebooted.
Speaking of which, this is WBAI.
When they rebooted, I was very curious to see what they had done because even though I hadn't seen the show in like 20 years, the Doctor was still an amazing part of my life. I mean, Baker was still, that was just. To me, there was
something magical.
There
about
was,
him.
Though. Yeah. There was. And that was,
it was
the thing.
Like Harpo
as soon as it went, it was like,
space.
Oh my God, they're back. I'd love to see what they've done with it. Because I remembered all the conventions.
It was so
the Daleks,
cheap. It
the
was
Cybermen.
So tongue-in-cheek.
But the thing is that the storylines, especially even going back, they were always much more in-depth and serious than what
than real attempts.
And the things, I mean, they were telling amazing stories about human nature. And about the consequences of our actions,
mm-hmm.
and about the possibilities, both good and bad, for mankind. And we had this messianic figure who saved us time and again from our own sins, in essence, and died and was reborn often. You know, I mean, he's come back more than Jesus, and for much the same purpose. And that the literalization of that. In the Tenet episode, where the angels are literally hefting him heavenwards
right.
to save the day,
mm-hmm.
I wept. I mean, it was like it was the culmination of a subtextual imagery that I had sensed in the show all along but never verbalized. And it just thrilled my Catholic roots. And
I was going to say there's a Christian
absolutely.
Thing going on there
there's
because it didn't quite
Christian.
Do it,
no,
didn't,
it,
it didn't quite do the same for me.
No, absolutely. I mean, it definitely there is a very strong Christian ethos behind it, which I don't think negates other belief structures.
I'm sure it's COE,
but it's COE,
yeah.
and it's Christian, and it is messianic, and it does
yeah.
have to do
yeah.
with a lot of things. Though in latter years recently, I've been going. The Doctor doesn't love Earth. The Doctor loves England. He just seems to save the rest of us just so he can save England. But
well,
so there's
yeah, but,
that part
but,
of it
but,
as well.
But since then, they opened their market.
Well,
yes.
They got him to America, and they got a little more generous with their nature. But
because they're making as much or more money here.
Yes.
Yes.
And we buy.
Selling,
well, we buy the
here. They sell commercials. They don't do that in Canada.
No,
they don't
no,
do that no, anywhere
no,
in
no.
what's
the marketing,
left of the Commonwealth.
And every time I walk into a store, and I mean, the Doctor Who merchandising is going beyond
yes.
specialty stores now. I mean, I can't think what it was, but there were like all these Doctor Who plush TARDIS key rings and
oh, yeah,
plush
yeah.
Dalek key rings.
Yeah.
And it was in an environment
that
was not
ordinary. I believe I gave you an adipose.
I have more than one guest has sat on my little adipose or questioned it before.
Would you please rephrase that?
Good night, folks.
You also gave me a Doctor Who beach towel, which someone else gave me one of, so I have two.
Yeah.
My secret plan is to go to a resort, lay them both out, and lie on one.
And wait.
And whoever asks if the other is occupied as my life mate.
There you go. Okay, so listeners,
Keep an eye out for an empty Doctor Who towel.
Exactly, yes. But what happened was the doctors in the classic era, not counting Paul McGann, were never romantic images. They may, in fact, and Tom Baker had a character regenerate so that his wife could come on and play the Princess Romana. After,
and they still had no romantic interest in each other.
Well, not for long.
Yeah.
And she's now, is it she, I believe in, I believe that she's in the House of Commons or something like
is
that.
Is she?
You mean the actual one, not a series called.
The woman.
Yeah.
How funny.
Who Tom Baker married, who was the second Princess Romana.
Yeah, I know her well. I remember her well. She stole the face of another character that she played previous to that.
Yeah. So, but the point is the first doctor was elderly and curmudgeonly. They were all Baker was
cranky. He was the crankiest next to the first doctor.
Was cranky and often wrong in a very humorous manner.
Mm-hmm.
Why it's like you're describing me.
Manner. Yeah, and but when they rebooted the series, they started out with a very punk, very dashing black leather,
sexy leather jacket,
leather jacket doctor with very good looks, very good talent, a grin to rival Tom Baker's.
Yeah.
Chris Eccleston was fabulous, and the episodes they wrote for him were just dark enough and yet light enough. And for some reason, there was a falling out. You know, they've never admitted this, but it's real obvious. I mean, he refuses to be in, like, the photographs of all the doctors. He refused to be in the 50th anniversary, which he was certainly offered. He will have nothing whatsoever to do with Who. And it's not like his career has totally taken off. I mean, he was in some Marvel movie recently wearing so much makeup that
Thor the Dark World.
Yes. That's it. Thor the Dark World.
And also his first role was in Heroes.
The G.I. Joe.
Playing Claude Rains,
He didn't do well in the G.I. Joe movies. The Avenger, the villain he played in wasn't the Avengers movie. He was destroying the Eiffel Tower and melting.
G.I.
Oh, that was
Joe,
the G.I. Joe movie.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
But he was dreadful in that. I mean, it became one of those departures to rival that of the redheaded actor from the cop show who's now got a CSI gig.
David Caruso.
I
don't want to be stuck in this forever. I'm leaving. And he made Jade and one or two other horrible movies and vanished for a decade or two until he got a new hit series, which is ironically, network cop show.
And David Morris
was funny
another,
turn for you.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean,
Denise Crosby comes to mind.
MASH. There's a classic.
You know, the guy in MASH. I mean, there are all these actors who are like, I don't want to get stuck in this role, and they leave and they barely get anything palatable again. So I'm curious about that take on the first Doctor.
Eccleston.
Only because it's like...
Excuse me, the ninth Doctor.
The ninth Doctor. But at the time, eighth season... But anyway, the explanation given at the time was not wanting to be typecast and locked into that, but he's not gotten out of that genre since, particularly. Well, he's in that. Well, it's still genre material. The HBO Last Left Behind.
I'm not saying he's not working.
No. But not sufficiently to justify leaving a sugar teat like that,
which
he could have stayed on for at least 3 years and gotten millions out of.
Yeah, 3 years is the usual.
Yeah.
Rain. Rain. I was thinking like Tour of Duty for a doctor.
It's like Tour of Duty. Tennant stayed longer, though. He was almost as long as Baker.
Tennant was 4 years, including... Right.
So that's still half
of
Baker.
He was 3 years plus four TV movies.
Right.
Okay, so if you don't really count those... yes.
Wait.
One season was nothing but four 90-minute episodes.
Back to back. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And only one of those was back to back.
But see, that was what I loved about the original series was you would start watching a half-hour story. You didn't know if you were going to get an hour-long story, a half-hour story, or an 8-hour story.
No, they were...
Because some of those went on for six episodes.
No, they were either four or six.
Right. But I mean, we didn't have
they had a couple
six episode shows.
In very early days.
Well, actually, Black Orchid, which was a Peter Davison episode.
Davison.
Thank you.
Oh, or Moffat, if you like.
How many demerits have I gotten so far tonight?
Not as many as me. He started on me in the car with the car changing direction thing.
Anyways.
when the GPS is talking to me, I like to hear it.
It doesn't talk long enough. I can't stop talking by the time it's done.
How long does it take to say turn left?
That's problem.
That's another Doctor Who episode.
I'm in the middle of a sentence. Anyway. I turn left by the time it's done. I'm halfway down the next
The one. Point was that prior to the modern
era,
the Doctor was not a romantic figure. No. Paul McGann, they were getting ready to do that, but thank God they had. And that I believe that was American produced.
Oh, it was.
Yes, it was.
Of course it was.
Amblin was doing
it. Well, it was Amblin. Spielberg.
Amblin and Universal was doing it in combination with the BBC because at that point the Beeb was saying, we can't mount this ourselves.
Right.
So,
and they had political problems within the Beeb in doing so, that the Board of Governors were against it. And they were still against the reboot.
They're eating their words now.
Well. No, there are still the forces that were against who then don't care that it's a hit.
Or making money.
Because
we're British, we don't care about those things.
It's still not making enough money to justify, and it's a very costly show.
Oh, well, yeah. That is unmistakable.
You have to remember that most of the places it's going to
are
not
getting it for nothing.
For it.
No, absolutely. No.
That's right. It's really only in the U.S. and where they are charging through the... But they stopped charging for it, which is why it did not last on any other channel and went to BBC America, where at least they can sell their own commercials.
Right.
Or AMC can sell the commercials, since they're now 49.9% owners of BBC America.
I did not realize that.
That happened in the last week or so. It got
announced. My God.
Busy.
Well, talk about the Board of Governors. They're trying to divest most of their channels, like Animal Planet, and they were half partners in Discovery with the New York Times, and they've been pulling out of that, and the Times would like to divest themselves as well. So the Beeb is a government institution and faces all the problems that many government institutions have.
Revenue stream.
Which is why listener-sponsored radio is so important, people. 212-209-2950. So anyway,
Clever segue.
Thank you. Come Chris Eccleston.
Yes.
We have a more... We pair him up with the first person we see in the reboot is Billy Piper.
Right.
Who is...
Rose Tyler.
Who is darling.
Rose Tyler, who is darling. Showing a preview episode. Remember how that got supposedly leaked online so that everybody in the world had it? And it was supposedly that when a copy was going from the BBC to the CBC, somewhere it got out. I am convinced, I'm not saying it's a fact, I am convinced that the leak was very much on purpose. Just as I am convinced that the first five scripts and episodes for the so-called eighth season were on purpose.
The first three were out there I stopped after the first one. Because I was like, I'm not going to watch these all twice in black and white and color. I'm just going to wait.
But the scripts were out.
Yeah, I didn't read the scripts.
I read the opening of the first
I don't have time. I'm working.
And that opening was great. Great. Of the first... of season eight.
Deep breath.
Yes. Correct. With the dinosaur. You've got one too, but anyway.
And our favorite interspecies lesbian couple.
Yes, but let's go back. Following Eccleston comes David Tennant.
Yes.
And there has never been a heartthrob for Doctor Who the way that David Tennant has been.
It was the sneakers.
It's great acting. Mm. It's... a certain lovability. I think that a lot of the episodes, when Tennant came in, a lot of the episodes I thought were juvenile. Because it, I think that they're, well, take a look. The first the first David Tennant episode.
Like Weeping Angel?
Not the one with Sun Terrans where he loses his arm, but the first regular one where he's on the planet, the new Earth,
right,
with a hospital and the cat people. Mm-hmm. And there are...
The car
and,
thing.
And well, that's two seasons later.
Yeah, but that was still pretty
true. That returns to New Earth, but right, a future, even more future New Earth, where the cat person is there with the face of Bo.
I do love the cat nuns. They were
yes, I liked them too. But the point is, there were a few episodes. One that tied into the first BBC television broadcast. They were juvenile beyond belief. They were so cute and darling. And then they would get back to some serious, well-written, well-acted stuff. And the Russell Davies episodes, some of them were good, but they were always, especially the finales, so way over the top.
Mm.
But Tennant was a heartthrob, and people weren't noticing that. With the thing with Chris Eccleston, and this is a theory, which is mine, is that the Eccleston episodes were very dark, and interestingly dark. And I believe what was going on was that they were headed for a place that the Board of Governors at the Beeb did not care for. They're saying, this is a program for 8-year-olds. This is a kid's show.
Oh, God forbid.
You know. Well,
it began that way, I know, but still. They were writing it for 8-year-olds.
It is still considered that. That is the Bible. That is the mission goal today. Today.
They're not writing for 8-year-olds.
It is what they are told.
They can
by the board
say
of,
it all they want.
These are the money people.
No, but that's not what they're doing.
Can I finish?
All right.
Thank you. The money people are saying the purpose of this show is to have fun, scary stuff for 8-year-olds. So that, this is why, by the way, it helps. Remember that the show started with an older man and
absolutely
teachers.
It was an educational program. There was a history series.
And now, as an older man and a teacher, possibly two.
Who's humping?
Yes.
Susan didn't hump. Her teachers didn't hump.
The TARDIS is a very big place. But anyway. And the Cybermen, I understand. But anyway, let's not go there.
May not be the first.
The point.
River Song may not have been the only.
The point is conception? That the show was thrown back to being told, don't ignore the kids. In those days, when they did Doctor Who Confidential, they would have bits in which little kids would talk about how scary it was. They did the fear factor. They gave a score. There were 8-year-olds reviewing the show every week. So you can say they weren't doing it, but they say they were.
Mm-hmm.
So one way or the other.
I would go 10 myself, but whatever.
Well, maybe so.
I know 8-year-olds. You can't put an 8-year-old in front of us.
Remember, we're talking 8-year-olds in England versus 8-year-olds here.
Well, they're all 35, aren't they? They smoke and they drink, don't they?
Yeah, well.
Coffee stained teeth.
Well, in France they drink.
Well, France they drink wine.
And actually, to an
explains
extent,
a lot about
watered down claret is not unusual for young people.
Keeps them quiet. Gets them to bed.
Yeah, très bien.
Does help get them to bed.
Très bien, my petite.
But
by first grade to fourth grade,
well, remember,
friends.
This all comes from traditions and places where you could not drink the water. You're going to drink the Thames?
Marie.
I don't think so.
Oh, please, people peed in the water.
More than that, they died in the water and stayed there.
Yes.
I mean, there was a line about what happens in the water W.C. Fields had, but I'm told we can't use that language.
So... people fishing it. But anyway, and they also got the romance a little bit too cloying. So then they switch from Rose and clone the Doctor and give Rose an ending with
a happy
the
ending with a one-hearted doctor who
yes,
died
exactly.
With her.
And then they bring in Martha.
Who I
Martha
love
Jones.
Martha
Freemia. How does one say her last name?
Oh,
it continues, but go on.
Okay, continues,
we
but go on.
We don't have internet
good
access,
actress,
or we could
actress.
Choose. Great, I
yes.
love Martha.
Yeah, she,
she was one of my favorite companions.
But they had her pining for the doctor in an unrequited manner. Then the Donna Noble problem. Donna was a great character, and at the end of that season, they literally kissed her off the show. It was in a very ignoble manner. But the idea
ignoble
always was whoever is going to be Donna Noble ignobly, that they were, that there was always going to be a sexual tension with the doctor. And what do? We bring in Matt Smith, who is the youngest doctor of them all, and is not a heartthrob in the way of David Tennant, but adorable. He's gangly, he's fun.
And meets his new companion at the age of 8.
That's right.
Who immediately finds him quite appealing as a companion, and then he disappears for 10, 15 years until she's a grown-up. And
it was only only 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But for him.
And that's exactly
as always.
The point. And that, by the way, is in the modern era, what they call season 5, the first Matt Smith season, from the beginning of his meeting Amelia to the end with the wedding of Amy and Rory and Amelia coming in, and the whole thing with the Pandoricum, and the brilliant, wonderful time-swapping stuff that's going on. That was one of that season as a whole, with one exception of a couple of episodes, is one of the best romantic comedies since Coupling, another TV series written by Stephen Moffat.
Which I also enjoy.
Yeah, I liked it. It was weird at times, and it went out on a fizzle, but it was very good.
Yeah, no, it was like, so they're just married and having a baby now, and that's the end of the series.
Yeah.
It was like, it's death, is that it? Is death?
A lot of Stephen Moffat shows end badly. Jekyll.
I didn't get through to the end of that. I watched it.
Stay there.
Oh, okay. So there we go.
The end is so disappointing.
Well, my feeling was even at the point that the hidden organization trying to weaponize Jekyll.
That's
I mean, immediately
five.
I stopped wanting to watch. It was creeping in episode two or three. I mean, that was hinted at early on.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I just sort of stopped at that point.
But
with
episode three, where you have Gina Bellman as Jekyll's wife,
yes,
versus what's her name, Michelle. She played the reboot of the $6 million woman.
Michelle Ryan.
Yes, and then she came back with David Tennant as the super thief.
Yes,
in one of the
that was
movies.
The new bionic woman. I only saw one or two because it was so bad.
No, the show is bad. She was fine.
No. She
but
seemed fine, but I didn't remember her.
But she was in Jekyll. She's the psychiatrist.
Okay,
in Jekyll, and the showdown between Hyde and his wife, where she gives as good as she gets. It's some wonderful scenes in there. The end of episode 5 is like wobbly, and episode 6 is whiny. You'll be whiny after you watch it. It's just no good.
Mm. So
but
in other words,
up until then, it was really great.
So in other words, we have a lot to fear when we find out that Moffat is coming to the end of his showrunner, you're saying?
The last season will be just dreadful.
Well, who knows? No, I mean, we've
or
already...
Or they'll get him out before he
We've already seen it,
up.
Because I extolled the virtues of season 5.
Right.
But season 6 and 7 were not very good. in my humble opinion.
I didn't hate them.
I didn't hate them. They weren't very good. They had a lot of duds within them. The whole thing with the astronaut, the cowboy thing, it just did not... The choice
of
Stuart Milligan as Nixon, talk about bad American accents.
I don't understand, because there was another movie, I guess it was the X-Men movie with Richard Nixon. It's like, how can they not do a Nixon? I mean, there is a guy
who made a living
doing Nixon. I mean, Nixon is not hard to do. It's like,
you could do one.
I could do Nixon.
Let me be perfectly clear about this.
But this is the thing. And it's like, I'm looking at actors doing him.
I'm not a good actor.
Who are directed or acted by people who've never seen Nixon, evidently.
I'm a good Republican.
But that was it. It was like, just a
yeah,
you shake the jowls. Yeah. But yeah, and you get the voice. I mean, if you're not doing the extreme caricature, these guys weren't even sounding like they were trying to sound like Nixon. And we know what Nixon
looks and
sounds
like. And Milligan is like a foot and a half taller.
It was just ridiculous. And it was just like, I don't even get why, really?
But the point is, the whole impossible astronaut thing wasn't very good. The whole impossible girl thing wasn't very good. The ending of Amy and Rory wasn't very good. It makes no sense whatsoever.
It does in the Doctor's universe of, like, I can fix anything except the things I can't fix. I had no problem with
the introduction
Amy
of the Weeping Angels is a classic.
Yes.
Well, the Weeping Angels Statue of Liberty is ridiculous.
The bringing back of them twice over
sucked. Could have stopped. They have a plush toy of the Weeping Angels. Why would anyone in their right mind want a Weeping Angel in their home?
There's some good T-shirts, though.
Good I'm sure t-shirts. The T-shirts are great. That the T-shirts are going to kill you if you stop looking at them.
And
whereas I don't trust a statue of the Weeping Angels in my home. Let me just say
that. I did not see any at Halloween, but it would be the perfect Halloween
costume.
It's
hard to walk around with your hands covering your face.
Well, that's the idea, is you look at the people. But anyway, and then they throw you back in time. But at any rate.
But there were a few, yes. I'm not saying that there weren't duds in the last few seasons.
So,
but I still enjoyed the essence. We have little time to spoil anything.
That's right.
We have to get to the current
season. So we have to get to season 8.
3, 2, 1. Well, you've been warned.
And now it's season 8. From now on, the gloves are off.
And here is the whole point. Peter Capaldi is not a romantic lead. No. The only time he's done that I'm aware of was in Local Hero. Which is a wonderful movie.
Decades ago.
A wonderful decades ago. Which, if people do not know, this movie, directed by Bill Forsyth, with Burt Lancaster and Peter Riegert.
Okay, but that's pulling us off point again. We have to get back to
Capaldi. No, it's not. It's about Peter Capaldi.
I know, but let's he's the most avian doctor I've seen. He's gotten wildly bird-like in the last few episodes, and I rather like that. The hair, the features.
He is a throwback to the original Doctor.
He's a blend. What he's bringing back for me is the cantankerous, really touch crotchety from the first Doctor, because the first Doctor was not a nice guy either.
That's right.
He was a lot of like, ah, you're idiots, and he pulled a few stunts when I went back.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was like, okay, you're lying to them because you want to get into this city that's going to get everybody killed.
One.
The Doctor lies, but that's
rule
established
number two,
from
the showrunner
first. The showrunner always lies. And he's and a touch of the cantankerousness also of the Tom Baker years.
Absolutely.
Because he was also much, you know, you people are stupid compared to me. Why aren't you listening?
Smith, I thought, did the best job of channeling the other doctors. You could actually watch him do Pertwee. He was amazing at that.
Yeah, no. And I liked that.
But Capaldi is his own doctor.
He is. Yes. But he's his own doctor in the same
fashioned
way.
In the manner.
But in the very much the same way that Baker is his own
That's
doctor.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, because he's just grabbed the reins. He echoes the others. The thing I always find fascinating is the capacity of actors to fall into the doctor. The thing I especially love about that is they each bring their own little thing, but at the same time, don't get along with each other. I love when the doctors are in a room with each other because they all irritate each other. He can't.
Yes.
It's the same way any of us would be in a room with ourselves at 20.
Which is what happens.
Which is why don't you listen, you idiot.
When Capaldi meets Clara as the doctor. When he watches in Flatline, he watches Clara become the doctor, and she is lying.
Yes.
And it has one of the great lines ever of Doctor Who at the end of that episode, which is, I was good, wasn't I? I was a good doctor. He said, you're an excellent doctor. Goodness had nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm. And thank you, Mae West. But the
point is, because this will be what is known as the good doctor season. Am I a good man?
But this also makes sense, because the doctor, ironically, under Matt Smith's reign, was the most genocidal since David Tennant.
Yes.
I mean, he was wiping out species right and left, to the point they locked him in a box. Everyone he'd ever wiped out joined up, got him out of the picture. And that was fascinating because...
Well, actually, the most genocidal would have to be John Hurt, but...
If you want to go to that point. Yes. But it was pre-knowledge of him at
that
point.
Well, yes, absolutely.
So he had made his appearance.
And that's arguably out of canon.
Yes. And the odd thing is when they all get together, I mean, John Hurt, the genocidal doctor... Well, although they got him before he became
genocidal.
The war
doctor, they call him.
Because he was very light as the war doctor. They're all joking back and forth. Well, they're cranky back and forth. But it was also before he had actually committed the act that made him the genocidal war doctor.
Wow. But the last act.
The very last act. The pushing of the final button, as it were. And that became the whole point of that episode. But... The new doctor, I loved, I can't remember who he did it to, episode or two ago, he pulls out a cigarette case and opens it, and there's jelly babies in there. And I just loved
that. I think that was the Orient Express episode.
Yes,
it was. And it was a perfect setting for that prop, but it was also just pulling back how much he pulled back the Baker years in his characterization of the doctor. It was really acknowledging that debt to that particular doctor.
Absolutely.
And to the original. But it was like, yeah, he's those doctors. He's the daddy doctor. He's not the boyfriend doctor that Tennant and Matt became. He's daddy doctor. He's the one who takes care, who tucks you in at night, and ironically,
but he's also,
because of
in
the
many
nightmare
ways,
doctor
the most
episode,
insecure.
Yeah. Which we see because we get him as a child having nightmares about something reaching him from under the bed.
Yeah, I have to say, I know everybody loved that episode. I did not.
I wasn't a big fan of it either.
It had its points. I loved the opening with him in zen-like position. I loved the format.
Yeah. Well, my only problem
of the episode
with it is that there's this thing that we never quite see. And the question at the end is like, okay, well, if the original incident wasn't some alien thing, but Clara going back in time to when the doctor is being left alone in his room, and she's under his bed, and she grabs him, and she tells him, and she establishes what he then tells her
right
later, or told her at the beginning of the episode, there isn't that being.
That's right.
And it was like, well, wait a minute, what the hell was going on? So was the character under the sheet the kid from down the hall, as you suggested, and they turn around and he just slips out of the room? Or was it the doctor himself from the future incarnation slipping back to play a prank on himself in an earlier incarnation? But there's no monster.
But there is a monster.
And the question is, what is the monster?
Fear.
But the fear manifests to the point of physical, actual manifestation, and think people
to
are disappearing
a child,
into school.
Absolutely, yeah.
But
to the kid, to the 8-year-old behind the sofa,
to the 8-year-old Pink, you know, and it further connected Pink and Clara.
Yeah.
Okay, now we have to get into Pink and Clara because we've got 7 minutes
and
left.
And Pink is Danny. What?
Are we out of 2:30 or 3?
3.
Oh, okay.
Jesus.
I won't rush through what we've got as much. We started at 1.
That's right. 2-hour show.
Okay. I was thinking it was an hour and a half for some reason.
It used to be, this is still the thon. When we come back next week,
okay, so
I will have had a talk with the program director, and we will find out what happens.
So I'm not incorrect. It's a shifting sands of reality here, BAI.
I may be canceled. I don't know. There are major programming changes afoot. Major. Thank
Life
God.
And flux. But the whole thing of that episode was that it was all built around a monster that didn't seem to actually exist by the end of the episode, which...
Right.
Well, but what the hell is that? I mean, that's what annoyed me about it. It's like, well, wait a minute.
It does exist. Monsters from the id.
Oh, yeah. You can monster id me all you want. If you don't have a planet machinery powering it, it doesn't do a damn thing.
Well, wait a minute. That's...
Morpheus sat on that planet. If there hadn't been the technology of... Who were they?
Which...
Forbidden Planet.
Oh.
But the monsters of the id was Forbidden Planet. There was an entire core of machinery generating that monster from this guy's unconscious. Now, we do have the TARDIS. I mean, surgery.
Krell.
The Krell.
Thank you.
The planet of the Krell. But the Krell technology powered the monsters of the id. If without that, I mean, the doctor hasn't expressed any supernatural abilities to manifest things physically, telekinetically, in the way that things were being manifested in that episode. So if we're getting that, I understand being afraid of fear. I mean, we've all read Dune. We understand that fear is the mind killer. But it
and
was
they
like...
they actually used that exact line.
Absolutely. But it was like, but what was under the sheet? It's like, I don't understand. Wait, if there's no ghost, what? There was something in the room with them. What? What?
I mean, I don't
you'll think... go blind.
I mean, I don't know if that's...
Well, but that's a Moffat thing. Moffat will just throw loose threads and not even give a damn about tucking them in.
That's
my only complaint about him. That's my only complaint.
Actually,
is that at the end it's like satisfying, and then you go, well, wait a minute, though. Three episodes ago, they said that wasn't possible.
Three episodes ago on Hour of the Wolf, Tempest Bradford was here.
Yeah.
And had some... And I'm used to sitting around and getting these, Moffat is a misogynist thing, which is nonsense.
He's
created some of the best women characters ever.
Including one we'll be discussing soon.
Yeah, but I always think of River Song.
Yeah.
But
well, she's great.
She's
and the actress playing her was perfect.
Well, mm-hmm. I'm a huge Alex Kingston fan. And by the way, people, Moll Flanders... If you get a chance to see Alex Kingston and Daniel Craig in Moll Flanders,
whoa,
it's on Acorn TV, which is, well, it's one of the few, you know, if you have Netflix, the second one you should have is Acorn TV. Although Netflix finally did get the second season of Miss Fisher's Mysteries, but you have new seasons of Vera and great shows on Acorn. But anyway... Terrence is happy about something.
Well, we do love when direct deposit... They didn't get my paycheck in last week, so
it
got straightened out. So I just got my 2 a.m. notice from
Chase.
Here
we are trying to get money from listeners.
I can pay maintenance
tomorrow.
And you're
getting money from PBS, so...
I can pay maintenance tomorrow. That's all I can say.
Okay.
My creditors will be happy.
Anyway, Terrence works freelance for PBS. Anyway... well, not PBS, Channel 13.
Well, Channel 13. I'm actually in the process of editing some very fun Brian Adams interviews we shot 2 weeks ago at his show. It is a little backstage at the dressing rooms of his show at the Garden. So it was, very fun fellow. Very nice. Yeah. Looking forward to cutting that stuff.
Yeah.
I've been chopping him down.
Oh, yeah, but you worked with Patrick Stewart, so...
Well, I never see, he never calls,
try
he never
that.
Writes,
yes, yeah,
he never calls,
and,
he never
although
writes,
we'll, we won't go into the whole
thing. I sent him a Christmas card. Do I get one? No.
You can walk it over. But anyway.
I could.
Yeah.
I could stalk him if I wanted. I know exactly where he is.
Yeah, well, it was in the damned newspapers.
I know. Poor Patrick.
Yeah, really. I mean, that's how I found out where he was, is because...
And told me.
It was very bizarre.
But it was
anyway,
good that I knew, because when he came into the studio, I could discuss the restaurants in our neighborhood.
Now, everybody was nervous about the casting of Peter Capaldi. To begin with, people were looking for either a multicultural POC character or a woman or something. And I wanted to create Tilda for... Tilda for 12, I think, was the button that I wanted to create.
Swinton would make a good doctor.
Tilda Swinton would be an amazing doctor.
I still did love the idea of Jennifer Saunders, though, I must say.
Well, she already was.
Yes.
But she already did the role.
It was the other one. It was Patsy.
And she got regenerated.
Patsy did it.
Jennifer Saunders was not also in that
Joanna
episode.
Lumley was...
Lumley was in the Rowan Atkinson takeoff.
Right,
which Moffat's for
which is written by Stephen Moffat. Right.
But not Jennifer Saunders.
Okay. No, she was not. Huh. Okay.
Yeah. It was the other one from that show, but it was...
FF, yeah.
And Lumley was very funny. I mean, her popping in that role was very funny. It was like, that's actually pretty good. But
and
there was series called...
And they had both the Grant brothers...
Yes.
But there was chat for a bit about Jennifer Saunders, possibly, and that just never went anywhere.
Yeah, well, there was chat. I don't think it was ever...
Well,
the BBC plays stuff close to the vest. I mean, people are saying, why was there never a person... Well, it turns out that Idris Elba was offered the role that David Tennant got. No, that Matt Smith got.
All right.
He was offered the role and turned it down.
No, he's too having for the doctor.
Well, he had movie commitments.
Yeah, that's
true.
And that's
and that's the Pacific Rim.
Yes,
I mean, you
know, yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, so it's, you know, this is an actor's life.
Mm-hmm.
Is your commitment? You may be committed 2 or 3 years down the line, and you can't.
Remington Steele was offered the role of James Bond, which would have been horrible at that time. But by the time he did it,
Pierce Brosnan, when he was offered the role of Bond and really wanted, and he was the right age for it, he was forbidden by contract. Remington Steele was already off the air.
Yeah,
but he was contractually obligated to be available, and that's what prevented him from being Bond.
He would have been far too callow. He would have been the Matt Smith of James Bond.
Well, I mean, he would have been worse than Roger Moore. I don't think so.
Oh, he would have been as bad. I think it would have been Roger Moore younger, with even more callow. But
possibly depends on the writers.
Yes, but when he did finally do it, I felt that he had had a level of life experience that made him actually play the role so much better than he would have at that point. I mean, the loss in his life, the up and down turns in his career. He was a mature, worn, world weary.
He's
Bond.
Getting a. I mean, he was
and he did a
brilliant.
Wonderful job.
Yeah, and
but
he,
I don't think he would have 20 years earlier.
He's a fine actor today.
Yes, and he's a fine actor today. He wasn't. He was a facile. He was a good actor then.
He came into television in the 70s.
But no one actually had to act. And he did far more acting than was warranted at the time.
That's true.
I actually caught a few minutes of an episode, and it was like him and I'd forgotten Laura, what's her name, who was great. She was it was a lovely pairing, the two of them.
Did you ever see the episode Tom Baker was on?
No.
Yes.
Remington Steele? No.
Yes.
I'll have to go look for that. That's very funny.
Yes, it,
but
was.
I don't think he would have been at all right then. And I think that when he did do it, he was far better.
Okay, so let's get off Bond.
Yes.
That's another show.
It's a
British and I'd be very happy to do it.
Mm.
I used to have Bond trivia questions that, you know, people could. Okay, who's the first person to play James Bond on the screen? This is less obscure today than it used to be because it is available
Well, TV
now.
Or film?
Well, you see, there you go. I said on
because
screen.
I know the answer to the TV.
Yes, and that is the correct answer. It's Barry Newman, playing Jimmy Bond. Exactly.
I couldn't even sit through more than 10
From
minutes
CIA.
Of it. I found you can find it
it's
online.
It's only about 40 minutes long. It's
it doesn't
on
matter. You can't sit through more than 10 minutes of it. It's
horrid.
Awful.
Well, he's a better Jimmy Bond than Woody Allen was.
I don't know how you can say that.
Okay.
Not bad.
Perfectly good James Bond.
And I, by the way, really enjoy much of that movie. I mean,
I love Casino Royale. It's a train wreck of a movie. But even down to Woody Allen burping his way down the countdown to exploding.
Oh, absolutely!
It's the silliest, most wonderfully silly thing.
I mean,
the
Austin Watts.
Orson Welles.
No. Austin
Powers.
Oh, it's
Austin Powers films are awful. And if you want to see the real thing, not something that's pretending to be the 60s, but is the epitome of the 60s, you take a look at Casino Royale with David Niven and Woody Allen and Ursula Andress. And
I would
Peter
say
Sellers
Casino Royale, but also the
Peter
two
Sellers,
James Coburn movies, the Flint movies.
The Flint.
Armand Flint.
They don't hold up quite
and
as well.
And The President's Analyst in a strange way.
The President's Analyst is one of my favorite films.
It's a very different thing, but I lumped it in as part of a James Coburn trilogy with the Flint movies because it was all the same sort of headset.
It's much more intelligent.
It's much more intelligent, and the ending
and
of it...
And William Daniels.
And the ending
end
of
is
it...
is so brilliant.
The ending of it is Apple taking over the world. I mean, the whole ending
TPC.
Scene of the robot phone company guy sitting
it's
there doesn't matter. It's where we're coming to.
Pat Harrington.
It's where we're coming to. They're going to give us phone numbers at birth and implant them in our brains. Pat Harrington in that chair with the little plug coming out of his heel and going into the floor. Much like the Apple stores, which have chairs with little plugs next to the seats.
Yeah.
But Apple, Verizon, call it what you will, technology is creeping into our brains. They'll be injecting it soon. So 6K now, they're fighting to do 6K because they've got 4K TVs on the market. And why should we leave it at that when we can make them buy another higher resolution TV in 2 more years?
But nobody will buy them because, in 10 years when the prices come down, it was the same with 40-inch high-def TVs.
Yeah.
When I saw them at, God help me, Comdex.
Like
Comdex hasn't even existed in 30 years.
You're gonna
they were six and a half. at that time. Yeah. And that money was more dear than it is today. So it's the introduction. Insane. Nobody's actually buying them. It's they're showcasing.
Yes, but they're going to keep throwing them out there and waving them in front of us.
Well, that's what they, that's how it happens. That's how it works.
Well, my thing
it's
is,
it's about a 7 to 8 year cycle.
Yes,
to introduce that to the public, and having that's how it works.
Just finally settled from SD to HD to have to go. At least it's the format is the same, and we won't be having to worry about framing. But I'm just waiting for direct brain interface because at a certain point, there's only so much resolution you can put on a screen. Just plug it into your brain and be in the middle of it.
So speaking of the 12th or 13th Doctor, depending on how you count.
Yes.
I think we're all in accord, as we were saying, that we, you know, there was a lot of nervousness, a lot of rumors, even after Capaldi was announced. There's a lot of nervousness as who it would be. And when Peter Capaldi was announced, people were going, what? And I thought, okay, I was hoping for something a little more gender-bending or colorful, but you know what? Capaldi was a great choice because he's a great actor.
Yes.
He has brought so much to the role. Mm-hmm. And but there have been rumors from the start, and we still won't know until Saturday, that, A, rumor number one, which I don't really believe, is that Capaldi is a one-year doctor.
Ah, and he might regenerate in the next season?
He will regenerate this Saturday.
So,
And the Christmas
I thought I was going to have to wait for like another season. So wait, the episode I just saw, the second part is this Saturday?
Of course.
Oh, you said, of course, I thought it was a season cliffhanger. I didn't realize there was a big closing finale.
Why? You and Matt Kressel, I swear.
Because that's what American TV does. Supernatural,
this isn't
here are the gates of hell, and come back in 3 months and see what happens. Don't know.
Doctor Who has never, ever done that.
I had a three-episode season. Felt beaten.
Matt Kressel about it was the season 5.
He
saw the Pandora opens, but not the Big Bang, which is the 13th and final episode.
The closing of the
Pandora. So he thought
he had to wait 6 months.
A year. He thought it would be a year away, and he was saying, "Well, it ended in the middle," and we're all sitting in and said, "Matt, didn't you watch?"
The
next week? And it was like, there was another?
Look, some of us have other things in our brains than the schedule of Doctor Who.
Not me. But
that's your job, actually, though. You have to know these
that
things.
And QI.
QI.
Exactly. But QI is the best quiz show.
Yes, I remember.
It's not
watch
really
it
a quiz
house.
Show.
It's
but
not really.
That's right.
It's a comedic quiz show.
It's like
Don't Tell Me for TV.
Well, actually, yes, except that it precedes Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me by quite a number of years.
I know.
But they're up to L now.
But anyway, back to the doctor. You were
back
saying,
to the doctor.
So great.
That was a rumor. Other rumors are Clara goes off with Danny and that's it for her.
Well, if they save him, which I'm hoping they do. It's Moffat, so I'm thinking he might actually get out of it.
There's one thing that I have been hoping for. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But my personal wish, my personal hope is that this doctor does, in fact, become romantically involved. Not with Missy. It's Peter Capaldi and Alex Kingston would make one hell of a couple. They are married after all.
Okay.
River Song and the Doctor are
River Song is Capaldi's wife?
River Song is the Doctor's wife.
Keep up.
Okay. Why not? He's the doctor's wife, but you're okay.
They got married.
Yeah, I know all of that. I thought you were talking.
But
about
they
the
could
actor.
Not show.
We were talking
a romantic...
about doctors and daughters and relatives, and I was.
I'm not here.
Okay.
Okay.
So
in the show, the doctor married River Song.
I was holding the flowers for God's sake.
There you were. Okay.
Now, and
yes,
the thing
but
is,
you had also smoked a joint.
Oh, I won't even go down that conversational path because we're on air. But at any rate.
Oh, it's air that we're on now.
Let's just say
something else.
Kettle and black. That's all I'll say. Okay, at any rate, one of the things we have discussed is the fact that though River Song has pretty much died, and we've seen all of her deaths because...
Yeah, but that's okay.
But hundreds of years of life. Hundreds of years of life. And a book and 2 inches thick of meetings.
And she's not dead. She's simply stored in the library.
Yeah, right. She's offline, as it were. She's,
that's
yes.
correct.
She's so it could either be actually, getting her out of there.
She's
online. But it could either be getting
She's no more
her,
dead than anybody in the Nethersphere.
Oh, my God. Wait a minute. Oh, my God. You know the door that's just been opened in this episode?
That's true.
Downloading brains into bodies.
Right.
That's all this is about. That's oh, my right. God. Maybe we'll get River Song
back. This has been my fantasy.
My heart is leaping up.
Because...
That would be so wonderful.
It would be
they
so
were the perfect couple.
They are... That's my point.
No. I agree.
Capaldi
and River Song and River would be Song, a fabulous couple. No, absolutely.
Two Time Lords.
Yes. No. Age-appropriate.
Age-appropriate, having adventures together, two wonderful actors.
Because she could either it's her previous to all the deaths, because she had hundreds of years of life before that, or it's they pull her out of the library and they put her back in a new body.
She has like a train spotting book.
They wouldn't have to do that because it made it clear that she's pretty well kept track of that, so it could easily be before she runs into David Tennant for the last/first time.
That's right.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. That long before both of her last times, she had a couple hundred years of meeting the doctor and running around.
Exactly.
We don't know which doctor.
In her first episode, she's like looking at him saying, "It's you."
Yeah, because it's like because that's not the face she knew him in, and that was with Tennant.
Yeah,
and
even with Matt,
the
it's
inference
like,
is that she's known many doctors.
Absolutely, yes. That was made very clear from the beginning.
And with the exception of David Tennant, married to them all.
Well, because she married
or
the one
many, married to many of them.
Yes, right. Well, she was married to the
Tom
one,
Baker.
And then.
She was married
to all
Matt
the
Smith.
Doctors post the one she actually married.
Right.
But she was in a relationship. No, that would be a fabulous twist.
It would bring her back in.
We all loved River. I'd love to see her come back and be reunited with the Doctor.
Yes.
I was so upset with her second death. It was like, oh, what do you mean she's just a digital memory? You're forgetting her now, and this is all sad. It was too sad. I loved River.
Yeah.
But much plausible ground has been laid for a return of River Song.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And because you're right, she's only in a system. We now have a system that can take bodies out of that and put them, which also gives us the possibility of Danny being returned somehow. Now, the only thing is, though...
Except that I suspect Danny isn't dead.
Well,
I think
we discussed this on the way in.
Well, yes,
because
but not
all the people that Missy was greeting in the afterlife, we didn't actually see die. We saw
That's right.
up to a moment... We saw them with
We saw
her
the dead body of because, an android right. or a cyborg.
A cyborg. Right. And then he's talking to her. But I'm not even sure we even saw the body. We saw him drop out the... Well, no, we didn't because we didn't know if he pushed or fell. We saw him dropping, I guess, was what
No, we didn't see him dropping. We saw the body
on the ground.
On Big Ben.
On Big
Ben. On the spire yes. of Big
yes,
Ben.
Yes, that's right. Well, so he's... So
we
that's
don't
pretty,
know. And he's a cyborg.
I know. I could have hit the metal part, not the human body.
Who knows? It's
we'll find
fantasy.
Out next week. We'll find out.
It's science. Not science fiction.
Yes. But.
I mean, where the moon is a cocoon, and let's not discuss the tidal waves. That, you know, I really love that episode, except for that premise.
Well, my other thing is like, okay, wait.
It was about
a
the characters.
So, it's an egg and. Salmonella, because I can't think of other bacteria that live in eggs, are growing at such a rate that they're increasing the mass of the moon. Don't they need food?
What
are they eating? How are they generating more of themselves without sufficient...
That's the problem.
That's why it's not science fiction.
and what's more, they never really, to my satisfaction, the speech that Clara gives at the end of that episode, where... The doctor has purposely manipulated
her to have to make
and the other two women, but it ends up being up to Clara to make a decision. It's as if he is training her to become the doctor.
But yes, and I was going to say,
which he eventually does,
which is the path because what he is forcing her episode to do is to make the kind of decision he routinely has to make every day of his life.
Exactly,
which is who lives, who dies. Ironically, because Matt spent his time running around saying no one dies today and kept saving everybody.
It was Chris.
Well, but Matt did it too.
Not the way Eccleston did it.
But Wait.
The one phrase that Eccleston will always be remembered for, at least by me, is justice once nobody dies.
Yeah, but then it got more routine with Tennant, like, no one dies. It's not even just this once, because he did it a few times. That line...
Tennant? I don't
that
think
That line
so. Don't
drifted
remember.
Through no, a few other doctors. No, I'll have to go back no. and dig up episodes, but... I, maybe not
there
Tennant, but I
remember
Matt saying
episodes in which nobody dies, but it's not because he...
No, but I remember Matt decreed, saying it at least once. I'd forgotten Eccleston
said. One time Smith said, nobody died, past tense. Something
I'll
like
have
that.
To go back
but
and
it
look,
wasn't
but
a
I
thing
that.
For him, okay? Yes. For Eccleston, it was.
Yeah.
I'll tell and you the truth, I barely remember the Eccleston year at this point.
Once. And that's a Moffat episode, of course.
Yeah. I'll have to go back and look.
It's
I
the
know
Dr.
that's
Dances.
Come up more yes. than once.
That is one of the better episodes.
Mm-hmm. But getting yeah. back to the current
it's
season.
It's the second of a two-parter.
Yes.
The current season.
Are you my mommy?
Are we going to get to the big cliffhanger drop that was released this past week? Are we gonna,
oh,
we
I mean...
We have 15 minutes we should talk about
I mean, this. I even alluded to it on Facebook where I said we would be broadcasting out of Missy Control.
So, well... Missy for Mistress. That
Careful.
Was very funny, too.
Do not
well, we
bang the desk.
Yes, I learned that the hard way. Although it does make a wonderful... If you do it continuously, you get a gong-like resonance throughout the entire desk.
No, if you want to do a rim shot, you say, but I'm...
We finally got to meet Missy, meeting the doctor.
Yes.
And discover...
And snogging the doctor.
And snogging the doctor, which is very funny once the revelation of who Missy is made. Which shall I just blurt it
well,
out?
Well, it makes, yeah, of course, it's a master, but it makes perfect sense because...
I ask if I should blurt it out and he blurts it out.
Somebody else has got to get a chance on the mic.
It was never a secret, and I announced it on the air about 6 weeks
that
ago.
It was going to be the master?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well. I wanted it to be the Ronnie, but they weren't going to
go there. I wanted it to be
there.
The Ronnie. The actress
That's
R-A-N-I,
listeners.
And Google her. She did at least three fabulous episodes with various
doctors. She
recently
died, she?
Yes.
Oh, but she also played Patsy's sister
That's right,
on AbFab
right.
and was right. wonderful in that as well.
Wonderful actress.
She just did a lot of
but
perverse
she recently
TV.
Passed away. Yeah.
Very sad. I did not know that. But she was wonderful. And the actress who plays Missy physically has a similar feline quality.
Ms. So, Gomez, what's her?
Google the name of the actress playing her. She's been fabulous. But it turns out she is the master, or the mistress, as she's calling herself. The big greeting of the doctor where she grabs him, throws him up against the wall, and starts just... And evidently there was tongue, because Clara asked that the doctor seemed very uncomfortable about that. And the moment where she's saying that she's an android and says something about her heart...
Pretending, yes.
And puts his hand on her chest to feel her heart. And he's standing there with this odd look on his face like, something's wrong here. I can't quite pinpoint it. And... It's been a long time since he's touched the chest of a Time Lord, so he wouldn't remember quite what two hearts beating under your palm feels
well,
like.
Well, yes.
But he stands there holding his hand, trying to figure it out, as Clara's like, oh, put your hands down, like he's hot for Missy.
Yeah.
But the whole revelation is beautiful.
Moffat had said before the season began that there would, you know, everybody knew that the Cybermen were there, but there would be a classic Doctor Who nemesis. He said that right from the start. Mm-hmm.
See, I never listened
season.
To any of that. I don't read these things. I don't want spoilers ahead of it.
It's
so
not,
I've been
reading.
Avoiding.
He goes on television.
I don't
anyway.
Watch that. Not American. And you watch strange, wonderful broadcast things.
I was on BBC
and
America,
if you were watching
which I don't get on fire.
And if you were watching it, you'd of course have to keep in mind sometimes the Moffat lies. So.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's my rule number two, the showrunner lies. But no, he doesn't lie. He twists.
All right.
He twists. He spins and twists.
Well, that succeeded here because he brought it back, but in a different form than we weren't expecting.
But at any rate, the point, my point was going to be that, you know, they established it, Russell Davies, in his over-the-top manner, John Sims, wonderful actor and all that, but when they brought back the master in... Now, Derek Jacobi as the master
was
fabulous.
Yeah.
But he lasted as the master about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And oh my God, power. I thought, okay, Derek Jacobi... Every time I say okay...
And I keep looking around like
Derek Jacobi, if they kept him as the master, that would have been masterful. So but nice. Bringing in John Sims, I thought the perfect actor to play the master would have been Anthony Head.
Oh, yeah.
He would be good. I also could even see, I'm blocking Sherlock.
Cumberbatch
would have made a fun master as well.
Possibly.
Yeah. The only problem is it would have been too close for his Sherlock.
It wouldn't be that far
but the master
away.
Is too much
and
of a
Moffat
sense of
can
humor.
Only juggle so many Cumberbatches at one time.
Yes. And Cumberbatch can only juggle so many movies in that series. God, he's in another movie coming out.
Yeah. Well, he's in about another
Alan Turing. And I know.
Well, there's also this...
None of which I've had any interest in
there's
seeing.
There's also this Hobbit thing happening.
Yeah, you don't actually see him in that, though. I love his dragon voice.
Doctor Strange, so...
Ooh!
Not signed yet, but semi-announced.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not right for Doctor Strange. He isn't. We'll test American accents there. Doctor Strange is a native New Yorker.
Yeah.
But as anybody who listened to the radio drama series of Doctor Strange on WBAI in the late 60s, early 70s will recall. Mm-hmm. But anyway,
I know he lives in the village.
Yes. Yes, he's from Greenwich. Well, yeah, his office is in Greenwich Village. There was an origin episode that had him elsewhere in New York, possibly Lower East Side. But as the master of the mystic arts, he's in Greenwich Village.
Yeah. Thanks to Marvel Unlimited, my Marvel Unlimited prescription. It is kind of, it's my therapy, so it is a prescription. But I went back and I just read all the old Doctor Strange, from the beginning to the end. And the reboots. They did a few reboots, which were interesting.
Yeah, well, what's interesting, I have a run. I don't collect many comics.
Yes.
But because of the BAI series, I collected Doctor Strange. Uh-huh. And the secondary stories in Doctor Strange were something called Nick
Agents
Fury,
of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
One of the strangest pairings, because they would start with the S.H.I.E.L.D. stories, and then it would be the Doctor Who story.
It's when Nick Fury was white.
So yeah. I'm reading through all of these, and I'm just like, I'm not understanding the connection between these two things and why S.H.I.E.L.D. is a strange tale as Doctor Strange is a strange tale. Wow. But it did give me a great background in S.H.I.E.L.D. as well, because I was sort of being force-fed all the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff to get to the Doctor Strange
now,
stuff.
I love my books. I collect my books. I would never sell my books. My comics, on the other hand, I'm thinking S.H.I.E.L.D. on TV, Doctor Strange
It may
movie
be the season
out.
To pull those
it
out of the box.
It may be eBay time.
It may
it
be,
may
the
be eBay time.
Well, I have 12 boxes at home. Four
I'm not
selling
my Howard
70s.
Ducks, though.
I'm keeping my Tomb of Dracula 1 through 10. But there's a lot of the 70s stuff that I may get rid of. The Tomb of Dracula I would keep. But the 90s stuff, there's a lot of.
The plan was always that the comic book collection was going to be utilized for an investment. And since my son's looking at college in about 2 years.
it's time to start cataloging.
Yeah.
I actually need to catalog because I actually might have some value in that box, those boxes. I mean, I kept them in good... My mother, one of the reasons I love my mother is for all those people who had this
aside
horrible...
Aside from the fact that she's your mother.
Aside from that fact, which alone, the fact that she didn't murder me over my course of my childhood, it endears me to her even greater. But she... My comic collection stayed intact in my family home basement through several floodings and several cleanings without being either flooded or thrown out. So she was a good mom. She understood that my comics were important and she didn't touch them.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes.
So,
but the new season. Yes. So back
the
to
current, the almost so old season because the last episode is in 3 days.
Yes, and I'm eagerly looking forward now that I know
not
I can get
the Christmas episode
that I won't be living with Dr. Interruptus for the next 3 months.
And then, by the way, now I want to know when, because it's supposed to be somewhere in 2014. Mm-hmm. When is Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell going to broadcast?
Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell?
Okay. Absolutely.
What is that?
I heard it was in pre-pro.
Pre-pro, nothing. It's a 2014 thing.
What is
it? It was filmed a year ago.
All right.
It stars Eddie Marson. Great choice.
Okay.
Fabulous cast, top to bottom.
Well, I said
co-written by Susanna Clarke.
The last thing I heard was that.
Is six one-hour episodes scheduled for 2014, which doesn't have that much more time to go. So I'm hoping, I'm guessing that sometimes the Beeb will, when one major show goes off, they'll bring in another.
So after so whose season ends, this will pop in? But what is this?
There's a novel by Susanna Clarke.
Which I do not know, obviously.
Okay, it's like...
I don't know Susanna Clarke. I haven't been reading lately.
About 8 years ago, it won the Hugo and Nebula Award as Best Novel of the Year.
Yes. Right.
Okay.
And it is about...
It's a fantasy novel.
That's all
about two magicians in Napoleonic English time.
That sounds interesting.
It's hard to describe. It's about an 800-page book. It is brilliant.
I'm asking for the
Neil
other
Gaiman,
listeners who may not know it.
Say what?
I'm asking for the other listeners who may also not know this.
Okay, well, I
it sounds worth pursuing.
That. I will rebroadcast one of my two interviews with Susanna,
okay.
And
that's
one with Neil Gaiman and Susanna. That was at Symphony Space.
Where he is extolling the virtues of her book.
And Susanna Clarke, for the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, holds the record for the most people attending. We had, that was when we were still at the Seaport in the large space. We had about 170 people attending that reading. Mm. And that is the largest reading that we have ever had, was Susanna Clarke. Outside of that, nobody's heard of her. But, it took her 10 years to write that book.
I would imagine.
And then she wrote one novella to follow up, but she is not going to just, you know, churn out the sequel or anything like that. Although there is, the way the novel ends, there's room for more story.
Well,
but
publishers like
I don't
to make
know
you
that,
add that
but
me.
I don't know that she is interested in that route. I don't actually. I haven't heard from her in about 5 years. She lives in Nottingham.
Okay.
And will, you know, doesn't make it over here unless her publisher is paying for it. Her husband, Colin, I'm blanking on his last Greenwood is also a very good hard science fiction writer.
But if you asked her to leave Nottingham to come on your show, she sure would.
There you go.
No.
Well, I had to. Somebody.
She
had
lives
to.
On.
Someone had to.
She
look
lives
after the
on
joke
the
I started
edge of
the, show
the forest.
With.
She really does.
Cool.
I would suspect that walk into that forest, she ends up in Napoleonic France a great deal of the day, and that's why she doesn't leave. She has a little time warp, and she goes back and does live research in the
past. Well, it's an amazing novel. I'll loan you a copy. But
I will seek time to read it.
It's an amazing. It's not a quick read. It's an amazing novel. It's very.
Cool.
It's got marginalia and footnotes that are longer than many short stories, and very, very, very rich. And it really doesn't have a protagonist. Mr. Norrell is sort of the lead of the story. He's played by Eddie Marson, who's an incredible actor. And he's a little bit off kilter, and then you have sort of a young punk that comes out of it, and that's Jonathan Strange. Mm. And it is going to be broadcast before the end of the year.
Oh.
So I don't know about, and I believe it's going to be on BBC America. Although whether it simulcasts with England, I don't know. But I know that it's on BBC One before the year is out.
Okay. BBC.
I mean, maybe on consecutive days, Christmas week. I
Possible.
Don't know.
Yeah, bbc.co.uk is probably your best option in terms of checking for it on the schedule.
Yeah. Yeah, probably is. But but IMDb and Wikipedia have it as a 2014 television series.
And we all know how reliable IMDb can be at times.
IMDb is pretty good.
As accurate as Wiki.
You know, it's Amazon. They tend to check their sources.
Yeah.
Unlike. And even Wikipedia has finally gotten around to being semi-reliable.
Yeah.
Certainly more so in many ways than it used to be. Now we've got 1 minute left, and I have no idea what's supposed to go on the air next.
Well, we could do what the Beatles did on the rooftop. We could keep going until they throw us
no,
off.
No, we cannot.
We're not the Beatles.
It is time to wrap.
We're not even the Ruddles?
We
can aspire.
I have the Ruddles queued up. Cheese and Onions, favorite song. But anyway.
Oh, yes.
And speaking of which, you did a wonderful mashup short story that you read on the air.
Oh,
a Doctor Who Beatles.
Yeah, so it was an alt hiss about the Beatles not actually completing Please Please Me. The group breaks up, Ringo becomes an actor and becomes a companion for Patrick Troughton.
So, it's a wonderful story. It really
thank
is.
You. Thank you.
Long-time companion or simply good friend?
He served throughout the entire
an
run.
An assistant. At any rate. Announce yourselves, tell people where you can be found online, stuff like that.
Well, thank you for putting up with me. It's Terrence Taylor. You can find me at either terrencetaylor.com with one R or doyoubelieveinvampires.com.
And I'm James Ryan. The blog is live at raginggale.wordpress.com. And there's a third book which I'm working on, which I will produce more information on as the sucker gets ready.
Okay, and we'll have you on when that's ready.
Oh, thank you.
And this has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Thank you for listening. I believe I'm on the air next week, and that would be with Raj Khanna, who has a new novel out, his first novel out, so it's very new.
Oh, cool.
And subscribe to WBAI, and Max, if you're listening, call me and tell me what to put on the air. Otherwise, it's going to be Democracy Then. Good morning, and stay tuned, and do support listener-sponsored radio. Have a wonderful week. Be good to each other, as Stephen Fry would say. You are tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio in New York City. WBAI, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and over WBAI.org.
Welcome to Science, Health, and Healing. What is power? I just heard someone raise the question about my very dear friend Armand DeMille. An interesting question. What is power? I'll tell you how powerful you are. Here's a question. You get the answer right, that's a lot of power. If you don't get it right, don't feel bad, because after I speak for a minute or two, you will be able to get the answer, and that means you also have the power. So the simple question, which many of you, I think, will answer it right, and that means you have the power. What is in common? What is in common among diabetes, blood pressure, and kidney failure, kidney disease, going on to dialysis? So what is in common among these three conditions, diabetes, blood pressure, and kidneys? I'm sure many of you got the answer right, so that gives you the power. But then there may be some others who are saying, no, we didn't get it. Excuse me. So I'll say, stay with us, and you will get the answer. All right, I'll ask you a different question. I'm in the mood to ask questions this morning. What do you think are the three problems which should be of paramount importance for our community, all of our community, including children? So this question is not really for the adults, for the senior citizens. In some ways, this question is more important for our children, teenagers, than it is for grown-up. So what are the three problems that you think are of the greatest importance to our community? Well, I'm sure you got the answer right, right? It's diabetes, blood pressure, kidney failure, right? So the next question would be, what can you do in a very, very simple way? You know, when I used to teach at Columbia and some other places, I would sometimes, just to get cheap thrills myself, and shock the students a little. Sometimes the students have to be awakened, right? So I would ask them, I would point to a student and I said, suppose in the middle of the night somebody woke you up with a gun on your temple and asked, what's your name? What would you say? What's your name? I said, no, it's not your name. Okay, I want to make a point. I think if somebody woke you up with a gun on your temple and asked you your name, if your name is Cheryl, you will say Cheryl. You will say Susie. You will say Sandra. But you will not say, You will not try to size up the whole situation. I think we know something. When we know something, it ought to be like that. We shouldn't have to really ask questions about things that we know. You raise a pen, you know it's a pen. You really don't want anyone to ask you a question. What is it? What am I holding in my pen? Is it a rhinoceros? Is it a camel? And you say, don't waste my time, it's a pen. The only right answer to the question when somebody lifts a pen and asks you, what is it? Is it a rhinoceros? Is it a camel? Could it be an elephant? The answer is, it's pen. Can we move on? I think our community should know the fundamental question that I raised earlier on. What is in common between diabetes, blood pressure, and kidneys? Our community, our children should know the answer to the simple question. just like you would know the answer to a question if somebody picked up a pen and said, what is it? Is it a rhinoceros? You would say, no, it is not a rhinoceros, it's a pen. All my life I've used a pen, I know this. So the answer to that question is insulin, I-N-S-U-L-I-N. Let me welcome Dr. Professor Janet Coleman to Science, Health, and Healing.
I'm very glad to be here with you, Dr. Ellie, and thanks for adding the additional professor to my title of doctor.
Well, you know, professor is a person who loves to teach, and doctor is a person who loves to be part of somebody's healing. Mm-hmm. Doctors, we doctors don't heal. Mm-hmm. We just participate in other people's healing. Now, if you apply those two criteria to yourself, Janet, quite apart from your interest in literature and being a great broadcaster, if you apply those two criteria, you clearly, eminently qualify